I like it when people come a bit closer, it gives it much more atmosphere. Some of the talks which I give, sometimes more people come than the seats, and they come and sit on the stage. It's really cool. One of the last times that happened, I was in Melbourne University. And the talk was advertised on social media, so many people came up, the poor security guards couldn't cope with them. And they're coming in all entrances, sitting in the aisles and then just on the seats around me, until the professor who was supposed to introduce me, he couldn't get in. And I saw him through the glass doors. I can't get in. Introduce yourself. That was really good fun. I like it when things go wrong. When things don't go according to plan. Because that's much more interesting and much more fun than when everything is just so choreographed. And actually, that's a good introduction, because the talk I was going to give this evening, I said, was about planning and how stupid planning is and what a wonderful life it is when we stop planning. And it's so true that when things go wrong, that's life. When it doesn't go according to plan, then there's something which is real about that. And I've done many, many things which don't go according to plan. There was a funeral this afternoon, and many of the family are here this evening, but that funeral went really smoothly. But I've done so many funerals, I've been here for 34 years now, which went wrong. And they are my favorite funerals. Honestly, there was one monk I know in Sydney. He used to be a funeral director before. And it seems to be like a nice job for sort of people in our sort of trade. We're not scared of anything. But anyway, he was telling me that as a funeral director in Sydney, some of the stories which, you know, he got up to, he said that, yeah, it does happen that sometimes, you know, everyone makes mistakes. They take the wrong body to the wrong cemetery. I know you're supposed to be at Karakata. No, I thought it was supposed to be at Fremantle. Of course, things happen that way. And he said that once he was, this was in Sydney, he was called, they have to collect the bodies as well. I hope you don't mind anecdotes. They had to collect the bodies, and it's one of these old apartment buildings, you know, like not the modern ones. It wasn't an elevator, but it was a really small elevator. And the stairs, there's no way he can get sort of like the little, it's not a coffin yet, the little trolley. They put the dead person on, so strap him in there, and just, to try and take him down the stairs. But even in the elevator was too small. And he was on the top story. So what to do? It'd be like some comedy show, but this was real life. You know, real life is much more funny than anything they can invent on the TV. So what they did, you know, they decided, well, the only thing to do is actually just carry him down ourselves. So they forgot about the trolley. There's just these two funeral directors, you know, in black. They, you know, look pretty sort of weird already. And with the dead person in between, just holding on to him, standing. And, of course, it's one of these old apartment blocks where everybody knew one another. So they knew this guy has died. So top story, I don't know, about six stories or something, down to the ground floor where the hearse was waiting. They were praying, please, nobody press the button halfway down. But, of course, there is some law which is even the most powerful law in the whole universe which you can rely upon. It's called Murphy's Law. If something can go wrong, it does go wrong. So the elevator stopped on the third floor, halfway down. They couldn't do anything about it. And when the doors opened, there's this little old lady who'd also lived in the apartment block for a long time. And you can imagine what she saw. This guy, who she knew was dead, standing between these two guys in black. And my friend, the funeral director, he said, we don't know how this happened, but we lost control of him, and he started falling towards the old woman. And the old woman fainted. She just dropped down. What do we do next? So they thought the only thing we can do, they grabbed on the guy again and pressed the button, and they just hoped they didn't have another customer. They ran up the stairs afterwards, and she was okay. She was a bit shocked. But you know, when it can happen, it does happen. All the time, they said, when they had, you know, too many bodies to collect, and you know, they just happened to be a bit too fat, so they put the bodies in the back of the hearse, and of course, the back of the hearse was so heavy, the front lifted up, and they couldn't drive the thing. All sorts of interesting stuff which happens when things go wrong. But it causes, number one, human, it causes things actually to be quite real. Because in life, things do not go according to plan. Not in my life anyway, I don't know about your life. I had all these plans when I was growing up to be rich. Now look at me, I haven't got any money at all. No superannuation, no insurance. Just relying on the goodwill of my supporters, which is actually quite huge, I'm quite okay. And I thought that, you know, that I would actually go and have a nice house. I thought, I'm 65 now, I thought that when I'm 65 I'd be able to retire and live by the beach somewhere and just, you know, just do nothing all day. Now I don't live by the beach, but I still do nothing all day. So that's sort of okay. But everything I ever planned. I remember when I was at university. So when I first had my, now looking at what career you want to do in your world. And my plan was to become a monk. And my plan, become a monk and tell sort of give nice lectures, make people laugh. And when I told people I'd, you know, be as a speaker and be a monk and give talks, you know, all my friends laughed at me. You're not laughing at me now. But anyway, all those plans which I had as a young man never actually eventuated. Much better things happened. And it taught me a very important thing in life, is that all the plans which you have, number one, they never work out, and number two, they stop life actually happening and making life interesting and fun and real. Life is a series of unexpected events. And if you have plans, you say, yes, it went wrong. If you don't have plans, it just went interesting. It went on a journey which you never expected, which was far better than the plan which you actually had, as long as you are willing to let go of the plans. Plans limit you. Another example, for those of you who go to see the monastery where I live, Bodhinyana Monastery in Serpentine, it's 34 years now almost that it's been there. And did we have a big plan of what we were going to do? Absolutely no. We built, you know, the first building we built, we're very practical monks. You think, well, maybe a hut where we can live? No. Maybe just a hall to meditate? No. Maybe the place where a kitchen so we can actually cook things? No, the first building we built at that monastery were toilets. We were very practical. The most important room in your house, the place where you probably spend more time than anywhere else, the loo, the toilet. We actually don't call it toilets in Buddhist temples, we call it letting go rooms. And it's very, very important because as I was talking, to Reno Carlico today, the way you go to the toilet is also the way you meditate. If you sit on that toilet and you put forth effort, you strive, you struggle, you will get hemorrhoids. You sit down there, and what do? You relax, you're mindful, and you learn how just to let things be, relax. Don't anticipate, don't worry how much time it's going to take. Just learn to relax and everything just flows normally. But if you're a control freak, you get piles. That's why monks, or good monks, meditators, don't get piles. But it's the same when you meditate. If you struggle and strive, you get the hemorrhoids of the mind. You get headaches. And it's just so similar. If you want things to flow and let go, and things actually to be happy, you learn how to be peaceful and let go. So that was one of the most important rooms we actually ever built in our monastery, the letting go rooms. But we just did that because we needed to. And then once that gets finished, then the next thing. And then the next thing. That monastery, evolved without any grand plan. And that's the most important. That's why, when you go there, it's natural. It tends to fit in. Instead of having, please excuse me, about architects or engineers, always have to do a plan before they can do anything. Usually I do the thing first of all, and I draw the plan afterwards. So it fits into the plan, but do it first, because that's nature. Even I did do a lot of building. To do a building, you've got to look at it, feel it, know which way to go next, and just to change it here and to amend it there, to let it grow, let it be sort of organic. And the way we built our monastery is the way I live my life. Never know what's going to happen next. Never planned to actually to become a monk who teaches. My goal in life was to be a hermit. Hermits. I remember there was actually one of the monks over at New Norcia told me there was a hermit's conference. No one turned up. It's a joke, it's a nice joke, but that actually came from New Norcia monks. A conference of hermits and no one turned up. Anyway, back to... We have got some religious jokes every now and again. So... Actually, I know they've been in the news, but I really like the old Abbot Placid, because, have you ever been to that New Norcia monastery, just about 2 hours north of here? It's really old. And, because we were monks, we were friends with these guys, they took us on a tour inside. Really ancient buildings. And so I asked, any ghosts in this monastery? Any ghosts there? And, it was a bit of a trick question. And the Abbot Placid, the Catholics, said, no, Catholics, we don't believe in ghosts. So what about the Holy Ghost? Yeah, I caught you. We did become a good friend. I was telling the monks the other day that we try and keep out all the superstitions and rituals as much as possible, because rituals in religion, sometimes they get so boring. And because I'm well connected with the different religions, I did go to the ordination of Kate Galsworthy. She's the first Anglican female bishop in the whole world, apparently. So she was ordained in St. George's Cathedral. I thought, this is really cool, I can support that. So I went there to St. George's Cathedral for the ordination of the first Anglican Christian female bishop in the world. That's really cool. But the ceremony wasn't cool. 2 hours. 2 hours of ceremonies. But fortunately, they put me sitting next to the Uniting Church head and also Abbot Placid, from New Norcia. We were the heretics. We were on the heretic pew. So we spent the 2 hours. I was well behaved for the first 15 or 20 minutes, but when it got boring, I started telling jokes to Abbot Placid, and he responded. He was a really funny man. Funny monk. He was an abbot as well. It must be something about abbots. You have to have a sense of humour to be able to accept this type of job. But anyway, it was very funny. So we spent over an hour and a half, and they couldn't kick us out or tell us to be quiet for misbehaving. Because that's what we were like little kids misbehaving in church. But, because we're both abbots, they had to let us go. Anyway, I just remember that was really good fun. But anyway, you don't plan anything. And sometimes when ceremonies go according to plan, this is what we do. And at 2 minutes past seven, this is what we do. And at 5 minutes, have you ever been to ceremonies like that? They're so dead. You might as well get robots to actually do a ceremony like that. People sometimes ask me about, can you give a talk about Buddhism and artificial intelligence? I've never seen artificial intelligence yet. Artificial stupidity, yes. But actually, that's if they do get artificial stupidity, some of which can mimic human beings. In other words, when mistakes happen, if you can get some sort of IT equipment and it makes mistakes and makes people laugh, then I think, yeah, that's... They have this Turing test that you can actually have a computer and people can listen to it and they don't know the difference between a human being. The Ajahn Brahm test is that you can have a computer and it does really stupid mistakes and people laugh. Then I think it's artificial, it's mimicking human beings. I never had a computer actually causing people to laugh yet. So artificial intelligence is a long way off. Because to mimic human beings, you have to also have artificial stupidity. Which is part of life. To me, that makes life as it truly is. People being humans, making mistakes, plans going wrong. I also tell people when they pick me up from airports and they take me to this place and they take me to that place. And sometimes they get lost. I love getting lost. It's the only time I get to see parts of the city where other people they don't usually take me to, the real city. When you get a plan and everybody knows the right directions, life is just so boring. But when you get lost, you find different places. Oh, you know, there was this, just on the edge, there was this one story I remember reading in a magazine. It's an interesting story. It affects Buddhism. There was an English comedian, what's his name? I remember him in a few moments ago. He's quite famous in England, in UK, but not famous anywhere else. He never made it international fame, but he was always on the TV. And he was, my generation, a long time ago, Ted something. Anyway, I'll remember it in a few moments. And he was performing in a little theatre in London somewhere. And having finished his show, he was driving back home, but there was a new one-way system in London. And because he wasn't used to the new one-way system, you know what happens here? They close a road off here and you get totally lost. He got lost in London, where he grew up. And he was wandering around trying to find his way home, going through parts of London he'd never been to before. And so he turned a corner, he thought this looked familiar, and that's when he got the goosebumps on the back of his neck. He did remember that street, but not from this life. He got a past life memory. And that, turning down this street, all these flashes of memory came back to him. Now remember, in London, you're not allowed to change the facade of the houses. The streets look just the same. Inside you can change as much as you like, but the outside looks exactly the same 50 years ago, 100 years ago. And so he remembered everything, and even to the point what his name was, and he was an entertainer before. He was a music hall star. This was about 100 years ago. And for those of you who know London, if anyone famous lived in any of those houses, they have these blue plaques. This is where Sir Winston Churchill lived. They have these plaques on the outside, so we know who lived where. And he had his plaque on there, who he was before. This music hall star of 100 years ago. And he just knocked on the house. And they answered, and they recognized him straight away. He's a TV personality. He said, "What are you doing here?" He said, "I used to live here before." "You couldn't have. We lived in here 30, 40 years. "No, a long time ago, that was me, this music hall star." And they let him in the house, and he showed them all the renovations they'd done. He knew all the way through the house, because that's where he lived before. And it was amazing to see. He wrote the article, and I remember reading the article. And unfortunately, what happened to him, and I only found this out afterwards, it was real. Because of a mistake of getting lost, he remembered his past life. But it turned out badly for him because he was working for the TV channel, not the BBC. They had another one, the ITV, the second channel in England in those days. And the boss of that was a very devout Catholic. And as soon as this guy started saying he could remember his past life, he was banned. He could never appear again on the ITV. That was the end of his career. It was a really great shame. But, sorry? Hud, that's right, Roy Hud. Roy Hud. And what was the name of this music hall star? I forget what, and it's basically the most famous music hall star before. It was interesting also, his rebirth. He was like in a musical, an entertainer in his previous life, and in this last life, he was an entertainer again. Famous, but not as famous as the previous life. But, you know, a natural entertainer, and he remembered his past life just because he got lost. Now, I love getting lost because it's much more interesting than going on the same route and finding your way. So don't have many plans. When you go home this evening, don't go on the same route you always go. Get lost. And I'm saying that in a positive way. I'm not being rude to you. And you find parts of Perth you've never been to before. And it becomes exciting, interesting. Going according to plan is almost like being dead. But why is it that people always make plans when they don't need to? And there's a lot of fear there. The reason I'm saying just as a training, just as an experiment, to, you know, go the wrong way sort of tonight, you know, go a different route back home and get lost, be prepared to get lost, because that will give you courage to be much more adventurous in life. Because the reason we make plans is because of fear. That's all. Fear that things will go wrong if we don't make a plan. Life is a series of mistakes. And it's from the mistakes we learn and we grow and it becomes much more adventurous, interesting when everything goes totally according to plan. I was brought up by that, by my teacher, Ajahn Chah. You know, you never knew what he was going to do next. You never knew where you're going to stay next. I was telling this to the monks. You'd be happy in a monastery, just meditating nice and peaceful. And then Ajahn Chah, my teacher, would, this is how we were trained, would come up to you and say, oh, you're going to the other part of Thailand. I'm sending you to another monastery. I'd say, well, next week, no, 2 hours. And before I knew it, I was in another monastery, the other side of Thailand. They had no possibility of preparing yourself. You had to be totally open to anything happening. Totally prepared for the unexpected. And that's something people are afraid of these days. The unexpected, we're not prepared, we're not resilient. When something doesn't go according to plan, we just collapse into confusion. And that is not the way to live a life. You know when people actually, you know, say that somebody dies? What do you say? How did that happen? They were 98. What do you expect? But still we say, how many people went? So a 98-year-old grandmother, you find out that she's fallen over and she's dead. You say, oh yeah, I expected that. Of course you can expect to die at any time. So be resilient. When people do accept that, life becomes much more alive. It's not negative. It actually brings you to the importance of being in the present moment, learning how to live. And what was that great? I love philosophy. I studied philosophy. I'm an expert on philosophy. But not the type of philosophy they teach at university. This philosopher was a very famous English philosopher called John Lennon. I listened to his philosophy on the music. You know he's saying that life is what happens when you're busy planning something else. And that's a brilliant saying. And it's so apt. You know, you're planning. And look, this is... Sometimes I really worry about people. Just can't you actually live a life and have some more fun and happiness in life? You know, we're having a retreat on at Jhana Grove this weekend. That's why there's a lot of usual people here aren't here this evening. And we just started this evening, and I'm sure there's already people planning what they're going to do when it finishes on Sunday evening. You go to overseas, you go on holiday, you arrive at a nice place, you unpack your bags, and then you plan what you're going to do tomorrow. You're not even here. And after a couple of days, you're planning, you know, how you're going to get home again afterwards. So we're always so far ahead of ourselves that we miss out on life because we're too busy planning something else. Even something I point out, which is so common, when you eat, I usually point this out on meditation retreats, not here. I don't know, many of you may have some supper after you go home from here, you go out and get something to bite to eat somewhere. If you're not, tomorrow, your breakfast, your lunch. Notice how you eat. How you eat. You've usually got a morsel of food in your mouth, chewing it. And you've got, if you eat with a spoon, say, Chinese style, or with chopsticks, you've got another morsel of food in the chopsticks, next in line. And you've got another one piled up on your plate, which is third, and you're looking at what you're going to have afterwards. You're usually at least two or three morsels of food ahead of yourself. Check it out next time you eat. Why can't we just be aware of the food we're eating right now, which is in our mouth, and forget about what we're going to eat next? If you're not paying attention to what you're eating now, you're not enjoying it. And also, you're not digesting it properly. It's one of the reasons for indigestion. Because to digest food, you've got to enjoy it. For the saliva to come out of your mouth, it's got to be tasty. And if you're not paying attention to what you're eating right now, the saliva doesn't come out, which means you don't digest it. That's one of my big problems. My digestion is so good, I don't eat very much, but I get so much out of it, which is why I put on weight. Because I don't eat much. But, you know, my digestion is so good. Every little ounce of carbohydrates gets digested and it comes in here. For you guys, most of it comes out the other end. Lucky things. But anyway, if you're going to have a good digestion, enjoy your food, one morsel of food at a time. And enjoy it, chew it, get all the taste out of it. Then swallow it, and then decide what you're going to eat next. Doesn't that make sense? But it just shows the nature of human beings. We're always ahead of ourselves, planning what we're going to do next, instead of enjoying what we're doing now. This is a long weekend, apparently, over here in Perth. It's called Labor Day. I don't know why they call it Labor Day when no one does any labor. It's a holiday. It should be a no labor day. Or maybe a Liberal Day. Or maybe if, you know, that party wins, maybe One Nation Day next year. Anyway, we'll forget about that. Mucks aren't supposed to be political. But anyhow, Green Day. Okay. But anyway, we have a whole weekend, 3 days. What are you going to do? Have you planned it all out already? If you have, please scrap those plans. Otherwise you can't enjoy it. How about waking up tomorrow morning, not knowing what you're going to do? Not knowing where you're going to go? Totally free. Otherwise it's just like going to work again. Well, you have to go here, be here at a certain time, do that at a certain time. Can't you learn how to relax? Why do you have to have so many plans? Are you afraid of relaxation? And just see what happens? I often mention that time when I was a young monk, just wandering the streets, well, not the streets, the roads of Thailand, having no destination, no plans. Beautiful time of a monk's life. Oh, I can really recommend it. It was just, we called it Tudong in Thailand. Charaka is the right word in Sri Lanka. Just wandering. Everything you owned you had on your back. You didn't need very much. You knew that you get some rice and something the next day when in any village you went to, people would feed you. Not much, but enough to keep going. You sleep anywhere, in the paddy fields, in the... I always used to like sleeping in the charnel grounds where they would actually cremate people. Because no villager would ever bother you there. They're always afraid of the ghosts. Ghosts were my protectors and friends. Always liked ghosts. So, anyway, actually, I'll just tell the ghost story. I like rambling on because I don't plan these talks, and it proves I don't plan these talks. That today we're at Karakata Cemetery, and I was telling this monk today as we were walking back from the funeral, from the ceremony, we went past the offices at Karakata Cemetery, and they are really haunted, those offices. Many people have told me this, but this was one of the people who came here. She was a Burmese girl. She was into IT. And she got the contract to upgrade the IT system for the Perth Cemeteries Board, and that was their head office in Karakata. And being Burmese and being terrified of ghosts because of all the stories she'd heard growing up, that she was a bit hesitant to accept the contract because she'd have to work in the offices at Karakata Cemetery. That's the main cemetery here in Perth, for those of you listening overseas. She was really hesitant, but she decided it was just too much money for her to refuse. But she decided she'd always go there late, so she was never the first person in the office. And she'd always go home early, so she was never the last person in the office. She didn't want to be in that spooky office by herself. But of course, her plans went wrong. She told me she was so close to finishing the contract. It was a Friday afternoon, only maybe an hour, and she would be totally finished when the last person left the office for the weekend. She had the choice. Should she chance her luck and stay, or go home early and have to come again on Monday? What would you do? She decided to chance her luck. Bad decision. So she stayed there alone when everybody else had left on a Friday afternoon. And she finished her report. Nothing had gone wrong. All she needed to do now was to print out that report, 50 or 60 pages. So she pressed the print button on the computer. And as you do, she walked over to the printer to check the printing was coming out right. All the pages coming out perfectly. Until, in the middle of the printing, a page came out which was not on her report. Right in the middle of her report came this image of a gravestone with somebody's name on it. That wasn't in her report. Where that came, how can that happen? On a computer program. And it came out and that was it. She headed for the door, got in her car and didn't stop. She went through red lights, she told me, until she got over the bridge to South Perth. Because she believed, and I remember reading this in Robert Burns' poems, she believed that ghosts can't cross running water. Well, I don't know. I know ghosts these days, they can get boats. But anyway, there it was. And then once she got the other side, she'd escaped the ghost. And of course, she had to go back on Monday morning because, you know, hadn't finished the report. And when she went back there, late, making sure everyone else was back there, she said, no, the people said, why did you leave the place unlocked all weekend? And a mess. And when she told what had happened, she went to the printer, and there it was, showed them the page. I said, yeah, that always happens here. That's normal in the office at Karakata Cemetery. So if anyone wants to get a really cool job, volunteer for the office. It's only a little piece of paper with a picture of us. Nothing really scary, but you know, it happens. So anyway, that's what happens when you plan. Plans go wrong. So live in the present moment. It's much more fun. If that never happened, I wouldn't have one of the stories to entertain you on a Friday night. Thank you so much, Liz. Anyway, so why are we afraid of when things go wrong? We've got it into our heads somewhere that we can't make mistakes. The mistakes aren't supposed to happen. In fact, mistakes are almost like evil. And to me, when things go wrong, that is like life, real life. That's the interesting, that's the juicy part of life when things go wrong. That's where I learn the most, get the most interesting stories when things don't go according to plan. So for a monk, you embrace the uncertainties of the future. You love the uncertainties of the future. It makes life so much interesting when you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. When I was on that sort of wandering around, I didn't know which way I was going to go. You get to a crossroads and then you decide. Much more fun, much more interesting. So your life is not planned out. It's work in action. The same as like people who try and predict and plan their life according to the horoscope. Do you believe in horoscopes? This is my experience with horoscopes. Many years ago, it was my birthday. And it was one of my supporters was thinking, what do you give a monk who wants nothing? Because he's got nothing, and he loves nothing, and he worships nothing. You know, that's what I always say when I went to Malaysia last year, when this Christian friend of mine, he tried to be cheeky and said, you know, Ajahn Brahm, nothing is higher than God. And I said to him, yes, I agree with you. Nothing. The great emptiness, anatta, sunyata, nothing is the very highest, much higher than your God. He got very offended. He said, that's not what I meant. Yeah, well, that's what I mean. His plans went wrong again. So just when you, what do you give a monk who wants and has and needs nothing? So, what he did, he knew when I was born, so he got my horoscope for that year. My birthday is 7th of August, 1951. So he actually paid a lot of money for this. So he got out the horoscope and he read it in public. He said, Ajahn Brahm, this is my birthday gift to you. This is your horoscope for this year. For those born on 7th of August, 1951, he said in front of everybody, this year will be an exceptionally good year for romance. I was a monk. And I still am a monk. It was wrong. He's a really cheeky man, that. But anyway, he was wrong. So, you cannot predict the future. So open your heart and mind to its uncertainty. Then you're far more alive. Now, some people, you know, who go to war zones, whether they're soldiers or whether they're reporters, they look at those times just when they come back and they survive. Sometimes it's a time of when they're really alive because they cannot plan anything. They really just have to live in the moment because they could be dead the next second. So there is something in that. Of course they get the traumatic experiences as well, but there's always a positive side to that. I still remember, you know, my family, parents in London who went through the Blitz, you know, the Second World War. And they said it was actually a wonderful time because they could not plan anything. They didn't know whether they were going to die the next day. There was a sense of being alive, being right there in life as it happens, instead of always being in the future sometime. So, when we actually can embrace that present moment, instead of worrying about the future, number one, we do feel that life has far more interest, power, meaning. So those of you who have lost the meaning in your life, it's because you're planning too much. Just worried about the future. And of course, you've heard me say, and this is a very deep teaching, so simple. Don't just think these simple teachings are just meaningless. Some of the most simple teachings, the ones that you can understand, are some of the most powerful and most profound. I know that some people think profound teachings have to be something you don't understand. That's what I experienced when I was a lay person years ago going to Buddhist teachings, especially Buddhist teachings. We'd go out afterwards and some monk was saying these things that no one would understand in a language we couldn't really comprehend. And I said, wow, that was really deep. Yeah, did you understand it? No, I didn't understand it, but it was very deep. I don't know, it's been there. If you don't understand it, you think, oh, it must be profound. No, it's usually gobbledygook and nonsense. But this deep teaching is, right now is where your future is being made. This moment is the only moment you have to do anything about your future. This moment is where you're creating the future.
So I noticed that a long time ago. If you're planning, you're actually destroying your future, damaging it, by not preparing for it in the only place you can prepare, which is right now. So look, quite honestly, when I give a talk, even this talk, I was joking, the monk asked me, are we going to give a talk about planning? He said, you're going to plan this talk this evening? No, I'm not going to plan to talk about planning, otherwise I'm a total hypocrite. So this is a total unplanned talk about planning. I think that's one of, I hope there's none of these officers here. No, one of the people I hate most of all, I don't really hate, but just think, well, you're really wasting your time in the council, I mean, in the government, the planning officers. You've got all these rules and regulations. And sometimes, yeah, you've got to have some rules and regulations, but do they really fit? Sometimes, you know, you just, one size fits all, plans and regulations for everybody, without any ability to amend it here and amend it there and just to interpret it and just give exceptions. Well, all plans should have so many exceptions to them. Because you've got to sort of look at a piece of land if you're going to build something and see what works instead of see what the regulations say. And so that's the way we like building our monastery. Just, you know, the plans, just you've got to put them in there, but just don't really give them too much importance. I'm going to get into trouble for that with our local councils. But it's actually what really works. So the best way to prepare for the future is actually right now, learning how to be peaceful. How's the best way you can prepare for going back to work on Tuesday? For those of you on the long weekend. I don't get long weekends. I just have to work all... I know the government over here is talking about stopping penalty rates. It would be great if I had penalty rates to begin with so they could be stopped. They give me the same amount of food whether I work on weekends or not. The best way to prepare for Tuesday is learning how to live today properly. Enjoy it. Be with your friends. Don't worry about the future. If you worry about the future, you're destroying the present. And you're also destroying the future as well. By that worry makes you tense, depressed, anxious, all these problems of modern life. OCD, depression, anxiety, and goes the next thing to cancers and heart disease and stuff like that. Why? Because you worry too much. Spending too much time planning the future. Instead of just letting the future evolve. Putting your attention right now, having beautiful, relaxing, peaceful, fun time right now is the best thing you can possibly do for the future. I learned that when I was even a student. Had big exams. What's the best way to prepare for an exam? If it's coming up the next day. This evening, relax. Have a good dinner. Maybe watch a movie, if that's what you like. Have a nice early night's sleep. Relax. Get up in the morning. For goodness sake, don't sort of swat the night before. About 2 years ago, 3 years ago, that's what I said when I was invited to Carmel School. It's a Jewish school here in Perth. I'm well connected to all this. Just because I'm a Buddhist doesn't mean I only hang out with Buddhists. I hang out with anybody. And not that I'm desperate, but I just like to... I just like to just make contacts. So anyway... I was invited to the Jewish school. So the year 12, that's just, pre-university. And that's what I taught them. And, I got this letter. Do I still have it? Probably not. I throw these things away. I don't keep anything. From the principal of Carmel School. Thank you so much, Ajahn Brahm. Because that year, they got the top school in the whole West Australia. And the principal said, probably because of you. Because I taught the year 12s how to do exams. Night before, don't worry, don't plan, relax. You've got to prepare for the future by living in the present. And it's the same with, Buddhists. They often ask me this, how can you die well? Live well. This is actually how you prepare for dying, by living. By being in this moment. In this moment, right now, you can't plan to say to the person you love, tomorrow I'm going to really tell her that I really love her, I care for her. Oh, for goodness sake, don't get caught in that. Today is the only time you can tell someone how much you care for them.
Because I was reminded of that today at the funeral. I mentioned the story of my father. At his funeral, now that's something I regretted at the time. You know, I was only 16. I never really learned the importance of the present moment to tell my father how much I cared and loved him and respected him. Because that wasn't a thing which you did as a 16-year-old in London in those days. And you regretted that. So that really taught me something, that if you want to say something, say it now. That's nice things, not rotten things, okay? If you didn't like this talk, you know, say it tomorrow. But if it's something kind and lovely, wonderful, do it right now. Don't plan it. Just say it. You know what happens when you plan it? You're going to tell somebody off, you plan it. This is what I'm going to say, I'm going to say this and say that. How many times does that go wrong? Because it doesn't work according to your plans. Life never works according to plans. So for me, the plans, yeah, you got to do them, but I try not to stick to them as much as I possibly can. That's how I was taught. Ajahn Chah was always just totally unpredictable, never knew what he was going to do next. That's why he's a wonderful person to live with, when he's totally unpredictable. Because he was teaching me what life was like. You never know what's going to turn up next. And so prepared for it. To be open enough to the future that you're not scared of it. Noticing whatever happens, you can deal with. Whatever happens, there's always something you can do. If it goes wrong, great, that's learning. That is, you know the old, that's dog poo? Dog poo for your mango tree when it goes wrong. When everything goes right, beautiful, wonderful time to live. So you can enjoy your time. But if you are attached to your plans, like, you know, also as well as doing funerals, I do marriages as well. And I tell people, please, for goodness sake, don't plan your future together. Do you do that? If you do, all your plans will go wrong. All your dreams will become nightmares when you plan. You've got to evolve, you've got to grow together. Does a tree plan, you know, when it shoots forth, how many flowers it's going to, how many branches and where its branches are going to go and how much fruit it's going to give and what birds can nest in it and what birds can't? It's not natural. Things just evolve. They respond to what occurs every moment. That's what I do with my meditation. That's what I do in my life. That way that life becomes this beautiful adventure, never knowing what's going to happen next. And again, when things go wrong, you laugh at it. I was also telling the monk that one of the other great funerals I went to was the burial. When it was a Chinese burial, and the family, they were just so respectful of their father, they got the most expensive coffin they could possibly get, with the most adornments on the outside. And in fact, it was so big and so much stuff was on the outside, no handles and knobs and goodness knows what else, that when they lowered it into the grave, it got stuck halfway. It got jammed. And I remember the funeral directors, they were trying to pull it out, they couldn't pull it out, they couldn't lower it, it was halfway down, it wouldn't move. And so I was doing the chanting, Buddhist chanting, which we do at these things, you know, to actually, and usually I just, you know, just 5 minutes and it's finished. But I had to keep on chanting and chanting and chanting and chanting. It was about half an hour until I managed to dislodge the damn thing. Get it down. I remember, that was a really great funeral, that one. So, I love funerals because they're very interesting and sometimes when things go wrong. You know the old joke, but this actually happened once. This was at Guildford Cemetery. You know about the, I'll tell you the joke first of all, and it's a really bad pun, about the funeral director who couldn't find the gravesite. He lost the plot. That actually happened once. In Guildford Cemetery, we're wandering around there, and the poor old funeral director, which way do we go now? Because I was at the front. You know, the mourners at the back couldn't hear what we were doing. Because they would get very upset and ask for their money back or something. But, you know, they were wandering around. And I finally saw, you know, somebody was waving at us a long way, the other side of the cemetery. Over here. Over there.
That's beautiful. That's life.
Or what's the other famous? I'm going to finish off in a moment. The other famous one, where was at Jenny's, Steve's funeral, where it was in the open crematorium over in Fremantle. So, and again, they made the, you can make your own coffin, you don't have to buy one. You know, it has to be a certain size. So they made their own coffin. The mistake was they made it out of jarrah, very hard wood, and it was the right size, but so thick, it was so heavy, that when they put it on the little conveyor belt, you know, to actually to go inside, you know, you probably, many of you have seen it, even if you don't come from Australia, you know, in England it's the same thing. You put it on the conveyor belt and then the conveyor starts moving and the little door, the screen comes out and it goes behind and then the screen closes behind it. This time it was so heavy, the poor conveyor belt could hardly move it. So it started moving, the screen opened, but before it was all the way through, the screen closed again. And it was halfway in and halfway out. And the poor old funeral director, when it went wrong, not according to plan, he went white, like the person in the coffin. Because, you know, things going wrong, that's the last thing. But human beings are human beings. These are people who come here. They knew how to deal with mistakes. So what they did, Jenny, the wife, jumped up on the conveyor belt and tried to push. And everyone say, are you really trying to get rid of him that bad? That's what they said. Somebody else said, oh, I grew up with this guy, Steve. The first day he had his car, he crashed it. It's typical Steve. The first day in his coffin, he crashes his coffin as well. To me, that was human. That was real. When things go wrong, they didn't go according to plan. And I tell those stories for a purpose. So you can understand when things go wrong, they don't go according to plan. That is much better. That is much more alive, more human, more loving than asking everything to go according to plan. It's real. It's life. So please get real and allow plans to be so rubbery they can go wrong and you don't get frustrated. You don't get angry, you never get depressed. Too much frustration, too much anger in this world because we don't let plans go. We stick to them far too much, attached to the future, instead of letting that future evolve. The great unknown, where we'll go, what will happen tomorrow. This is a long weekend. Please enjoy it. Don't plan it to death. Unplan it. And see what happens. And I guarantee you'll have a wonderful time. But maybe not, because I can't plan anything. Thank you for listening. So. Very good. Okay. Do we have any questions from overseas? Or from inseas? Here. Any questions from the floor here? Nope. Okay. From overseas. Here we go. Who we got today? A couple of questions from Serbia. And from A. Eddie from Serbia, Chelsea from Malaysia. Okay, I wonder where they're talking from. Another, Ecuador. Haven't had one from Ecuador before. How can you achieve anything if you don't have plans? How do we achieve our goals and dreams if we do not stick to a plan? Your real goal and dream to be free, to be happy, to be peaceful. So actually raise the right priorities. Don't aim for a goal to be rich or to be successful. Why are you being rich and successful for? Because you want to be free and happy and peaceful and enjoy yourself. So sometimes it's our goals are the problem. If you understand what the real goal is, peace and happiness and freedom, you can have that right now. So, change what you want to achieve in life. How many of you have been following these goals? And they promise so much, but when you achieve them, it's not what you really expected from them. People who try to be famous, people who try to be rich, when they get there, they say, what did I do that for?
What it promises you is what, not what it delivers. You have peace and happiness, joy, love. You can have that without struggle or striving. From Ecuador, what is the right attitude to face a serious case of false accusations where my mother and I could face jail? Obviously, you know, if you can get lawyers or whatever to take it seriously, fine, if you can do that. We always have some false accusations. I don't know what the jails are like in Ecuador. If this was in Australia, I still remember the case of this prisoner I met in jail who said he was put in jail for something he never did. And he said, I know other prisoners might say that to you, but I'm being really honest with you. I trust you. I respect you. I wouldn't lie to you, Ajahn Brahm. I didn't do that robbery for which I'm in jail for. Straight away I thought, I'm going to help this guy. You know, I've got contacts. And then when I was thinking who I would call as soon as I got back to my monastery, he smiled at me and said, but Ajahn Brahm, there were so many other robberies where I wasn't caught. I guess this is fair. Now sometimes, from Ecuador, sometimes it may be a false accusation, which means you may have to go to jail. You didn't do that. But are there other things which you have done where you weren't caught? Sometimes the way that karma works out is very strange. And you don't know all the things. If you can get a lawyer in to get out of that, it'd be wonderful. So sometimes we do get accused. There's some very bad and cruel people out there. So the best way of dealing with that, you know, to avoid cruel people, is try and be as kind as you possibly can, as good as you possibly can, so that people, they look at you and say, false accusations, not that person, not that mother, they're just too good. It just doesn't wash because of your good conduct and your friendship and your kindness and your goodness over the years. So when that's happened to me before, I am a good monk. But was it? I mean, some of you may remember this. There was, on a Friday night, somebody put stickers on all the cars parking here saying, do not believe that Ajahn Brahm. They actually put my lay name, Peter Betts. What did I actually say? That he's an adulterer, he slept with my wife or something. And they didn't actually say any names or anything, they just put the stickers on the cars. And so, you know, I didn't see it until afterwards when people came up. So the next Friday I said, here's the sticker. And say, even the Buddha got accused of things like this and he never did anything. So I'm very proud that they put me, you know, up there just... I said, look, investigate it, find out. And it's because of my good reputation and openness, no one ever took it seriously. So, you know, false accusations, they will come to every one of you sooner or later in your life. And the only way to protect yourself from false accusations, number one, is expect them. And if you can have a strong enough goodness and kindness, they say, that can't be true. Because you might be able to, you know, say, well, prove it, there's no evidence. But still, as they always say in Australia, the mud sticks. If you have an accusation against you, you can't prove you weren't there and didn't do it. So you can't put you in jail, but still the slight on your character can stick. And the only way to overcome that is have a really, really strong, good character. So he said, no, you wouldn't do things like that. And that counts for a lot. But anyway, false accusations, sometimes we put ourselves in a situation where we can be falsely accused, you know, because we weren't careful enough with our dealings. You know, one of the things you see with the monks over here, you know, we try never to be, because one of the biggest accusations against a monk is like sex, because we're celibate. So we never put ourselves, with just another person alone. We see that with like the child sex abuse. It's part of our rules. We're never just alone with a kid. And we're never alone with a woman. There's always somebody else around, a witness, who can actually stick up for us. Because how else, you're in a room, you're just talking to a woman, talking about her problems. You know, and no one knows what goes on in there. So you always try to be with somebody else to actually protect what we call the suspicions of the malicious. So that's actually part of our monastic rules. So that, you know, we can't be sort of accused because there's always a witness there. Someone sees what's going on. So anyway, so the right attitude to face, obviously, if you can do something about it, please do so. If there's nothing you can do, there must be some karma there from the past. So sometimes, and even going to jail, it's not the end of the world. I don't know what the jails are like in Ecuador. But, you know, I know many people have been to jail and they come out afterwards and they're good people afterwards. Well, we got one monk who was in jail before. And he said if he hadn't been to jail, he would never have met the monks. He wouldn't be a monk now. And so good on him. So anyway, that's the best we can actually answer there. Any other questions from the floor here? I know sometimes the questions from overseas, I may not have really got your point, and sometimes I do really apologize overseas. I've only got two lines here of a question. I try my very best. You've got a question over there.
Yes, thank you for the talk. Mark, just a question about, so it's fine not to have a plan. What's the best way to make a decision in the moment?
Is not to be the best way to make a decision in the moment is not to be afraid of the decision. I was going to say this, but I think I said this last week. It doesn't really matter whether you turn left or turn right in life. What really does matter is what you do after you turn left. What you do after you turn right. You make the decision work. But you're not worried about what decision it is. Too many people agonize, should I do this, should I do that? And they get so sort of tired, exhausted, waste so much time. Instead of just make the decision, just do it. Left or right, doesn't really matter. Because I've noticed in my life, what really matters is what I do once I've made the decision. That's why I put the effort and energy, not making the decision, but after I made the decision to make sure I put my energy effort to make it work. So you start a business, you decide to get married to someone or get divorced or move over to, you know, Sydney or something. It doesn't really matter, living in Perth, living in Sydney. What really matters if you decide to stay in Perth, make it work. And don't keep thinking, oh, I should have gone to Sydney, why did I do that? That is the most stupid thing to do. You're here now, make it work. Does that make sense? Okie dokie. So, no more questions. So now, let's pay respects to Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, and then you can all go home. Maybe, but remember to please get lost on the way home. Who knows what you might find. By the way, that music hall star, his name was Dan Leno. D-A-N-L-E-N-O. If anyone knows that particular time of history of entertainment in the UK, he was probably the most famous music hall entertainer ever, Dan Leno. And he got reborn as Roy Hudd.
Arahan Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantak Abhivadami Suvakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namassami Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sanghang Namami.